visitors can experience both the exotic and the familiar at the Scotland exhibit. It joins Mali and American Appalachia as the three featured cultures at this year's Smithsonian Folklife Festival. Bagpipes aren't an everyday sound to most American ears, nor is the ice ring game known as curling widely played in the United States. But Scottish plaid, golf, and whiskey are all popular exports to America. The exhibits have special meaning to Americans of Scottish descent, like Rabina Holmes. She was visiting Washington, D.C. from Boise, Idaho.
I've loved it. It's been very nice. The handicrafts and to see the way things used to be, the ancestral crafts and the basketry. I've been to Scotland and it's just nice to see it here and to be able to share it with the rest of my family who hadn't been able to visit there as well.
Some 10 million Americans are of Scottish or Scottish-Irish descent, according to the last U.S. Census. Their influence can be felt in many parts of American culture, including music. Singer Ishbel MacCaskill describes herself as one of some 80,000 people in Scotland who still speak the ancient language of Gaelic. She came to the festival to perform Gaelic songs.
They told the story of life as it was lived in those days. Loss and love and joy and war. So it covered all the aspects of their lives.
I wondered if you've had a chance to listen to any of the songs being sung in the Appalachian section of the festival, and if you hear a continuity, do they sound similar to what you've grown up with?
I haven't had the pleasure of listening to it yet, but I've always had a belief that Gaelic music has influenced the Appalachian music very strongly because so many of the immigrants went there, and I look forward very much to hearing it firsthand.
In another tent, Scottish archivists and historians sat ready with books and computers to help visitors trace their Scottish ancestry. I had a Scottish name, Beveridge, before I was married. It's not a common name in the United States, so I decided to try it out on Martin Tyson of Scotland's General Register Office.
That's really interesting. The town where I live, it's called Kirkcaldy. And the main public park there is called Beveridge Park. So he was one of the mayors of Kirkcaldy. So it's quite a well-known name in that part of the country. What we'll do is we'll just put in Beveridge and we'll see what it comes up with. It's come back with just under 3,000 beverages through the 17th century, 18th century, 19th century. And if you look there, quite a lot of them are from Kirkcaldy.
Thank you so much. Are you getting a lot of interest among people who want to know about their own Scottish heritage?
Yes, we haven't had a minute to sit down since the festival opened. I think a lot of people know they have a bit of Scottish heritage and they want to just find out a little bit more about it.
But you didn't have to have a drop of Scottish blood to appreciate many of the other exhibits.
This was the first solid ball, invented in 1848.
Barry Kerr demonstrates the solid golf balls that began to replace feather balls in Scotland more than a century ago. He represents Heritage Golf at St. Andrews, the last company to manufacture traditional clubs and balls. He says Scotland's passion for golf dates back at least to the 15th century, when King James IV tried to have it banned on Sundays. To let American golf lovers experience the game as it's played in Scotland today, the festival provided a sample putting green like those at the St. Andrews course.
It's about half scale, but the depth of the traps and the elevations to the greens have been retained as the original just to let people see the sort of slopes that are involved on the greens.
Ann Hoffer of the Washington, D.C. area got a chance to try it out.
It's just amazing. You see on TV the slope of those greens, and although this is just a model, it's stunning.
But also challenging, said a school-age visitor named Kevin.
It was great trying out like new clubs, but it was much harder because you had to hit the ball harder because the greens weren't as smooth as the ones that we have, really.
Visitors to the William Grant & Sons exhibit didn't get a chance to experience any products firsthand, but that didn't stop them from flocking to see the barley seeds, barrels, and 3-meter copper still that helped show how whiskey is made. I asked distillery employee Robbie Gormley what kind of reaction the exhibit was getting.
Oh, very good, actually, yes. They're all looking for a sample.
No samples?
No samples, I'm afraid. No. That's the most question asked.
At least one group of exhibitors is presenting a gift to its Smithsonian host. Alwyn Johnston represents Locarin of Scotland, a weaving mill that's making a special tartan in honor of James Smithson. He was an English scientist whose fortune helped establish the Smithsonian Institution.
I know you can see lots of greens and blues and blacks in it and the white. These colors represent the Mackay clan because Smithson was a Mackay. He never knew his father, but his mother married the Duke of Northumberland. And the other colours are red, white and blue in the tartan. His colours are the Duke's colours.
When the tartan is complete, it will be officially registered as the Smithsonian tartan, taking its place among a host of other time-honoured Scottish family plaids. For Coast to Coast, I'm Nancy Beardsley.